Here's a look at our top stories this hour. Iran says Israel's advanced military nuclear program poses a serious threat to international security, urging the UN nuclear agency to fulfill its responsibility in this regard. China accuses the U.S. of double standards for challenging its sovereignty over Taiwan while supporting Ukraine's sovereignty amid its war with Russia. Also ahead, Russia's foreign minister says supply of Western weapons to Ukraine only prolongs the agony of the country's government, extends the conflict, and increases its victims. Thank you for joining us. Iran's foreign ministry has warned about the threat posed by Israel's advanced military nuclear program and the failure of relevant international bodies to take necessary action. The ministry's spokesman says the apartheid regime's relentless refusal to place its nuclear facilities under comprehensive safeguards poses a serious threat to international security. Nasser Kanani called on the UN nuclear agency to fulfill its responsibility in this regard, as stipulated in its statute. He said, accordingly, the International Atomic Energy Agency and its Director General must strive toward promoting the peaceful applications of nuclear energy and non-diversion from those objectives. Israel is believed to have a stockpile of up to 400 nuclear warheads, but the regime maintains a policy of ambiguity in this regard. It refuses to either allow inspections of its military nuclear facilities or sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Iran's president tells his Chinese counterpart that Tehran supports the One China principle. Ebrahim Raisi says Tehran has always respected the territorial integrity of other countries as a key policy.
Respecting the national sovereignty and territorial integrity of countries is among the fundamental principles of the Islamic Republic of Iran's foreign policy. Within the same framework, backing the One China policy is the principled and definite policy of the Islamic Republic.
During the phone conversation, Raisi also condemned the United States for interference in the internal affairs of other countries. The president said Washington follows a destructive policy of unilateralism, which is now threatening global peace and security. China's Xi Jinping, for his part, said Iran has played a constructive role in maintaining regional stability. The two presidents also discussed ways to speed up the implementation of a landmark 25-year cooperation agreement between Beijing and Tehran. The deal is aimed at strengthening economic and political ties between the two countries. Palestinians are having no respite from Israeli atrocities as the regime's forces kill another teenager in the occupied West Bank. Palestinian Health Ministry says the 16-year-old died of critical wounds sustained by live bullets in the chest. Another Palestinian was also shot and wounded by Israeli forces. The Palestinians were holding a demonstration near Ramallah against Israeli settlements when they came under attack by the regime's forces and settlers. Israel has recently ramped up its violence against Palestinians, killing over 50 since late March. Nearly 700,000 Israeli settlers live in settlements in East Al-Quds and the West Bank. The settlements are built on land captured following the 1967 war and are illegal under international law. We have talked to our West Bank correspondent, Mona Kandil, for more information about the killing of the Palestinian teenager by Israeli forces.
A 16-year-old Palestinian teenager, Amjad Abu Aliya, from the village of Al Mghayr near Ramallah, was shot dead by Israeli forces, by the fire of Israeli forces and Israeli settlers. This is according to eyewitnesses there. There was an invitation or a call for Palestinians to take part in an anti-Israeli settlement protest, because Israeli settlers there, protected and backed by Israeli forces, continue to storm the Al Mghayr village on a daily basis, attack Palestinians, throw stones at them, hit them in order to force them leave their lands because the settlers want to confiscate more lands in the village of Al Mghayr. So Palestinians were protesting there following the Friday prayers, and Israeli settlers raided again the village of Al Mghayr, backed and supported by fully armed Israeli forces. And we have to mention that the Israeli settlers themselves are also armed like the Israeli soldiers. They opened fire at Palestinian protesters there, wounding dozens of them.
Palestinian resistance movements have slammed the recent killing of a teenager by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. The resistance movement Hamas underscored an increase in the number of crimes committed by the regime in the West Bank in Gaza Strip. It said the Palestinian cause will not wane in the face of Israel's atrocities. And the Islamic Jihad resistance movement echoed a similar message of Palestinian resilience. In reaction to the killing of the 16-year-old boy, the Palestinian presidency says, or has said, Israel committed a heinous crime.
This crime comes within the framework of the daily series of killing that our people are subjected to, whether by the occupation army or its settlers who are wreaking havoc and murder under the protection of Israel.
The spokesman also said the regime must face the consequences of the dangerous escalation against the Palestinians and their sanctities. Hudayna said the regime protects the settlers while violating all resolutions of international legitimacy and law. He said such crimes reveal Israel's disregard for its commitments and broken promises made by the U.S. during President Biden's visit. The commitments include halting all daily killings of Palestinians and stopping provocative measures by the regime. Hudayna called on the international community to break its silence towards Israeli atrocities and hold the regime accountable for its organized crimes. Beijing has slammed what it calls Washington's double standard for challenging China's sovereignty over Taiwan.
As the legal cornerstone of today's international order, the international charter is irreplaceable in its role and unshakable in its status. Compliance with the purposes and principles of the UN Charter should be consistent with words matching with deeds instead of saying one thing but doing another, not to mention double standards or selective application. While some country has repeatedly emphasized the principle of sovereignty over the issue of Ukraine, it has incessantly challenged the sovereignty of China over Taiwan, and even deliberately created tension in the Taiwan.
The ambassador also accused the U.S. of deliberately causing tensions in the Taiwan Strait. He added that the U.S. is showing disregard to the U.S. Charter. On Thursday, Chinese President Xi Jinping told U.S. President Joe Biden Washington is playing with fire over Taiwan. Tensions over the island have recently flared over a planned visit by U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, with China warning Washington of consequences. Beijing considers Taiwan part of its territory. Earlier, we talked to political commentator Greg Simons to get some perspective on the U.S. stance on Taiwan. Russia has reiterated its backing of the One China policy. Simons said Washington's position on Taipei is similar to its strategy on the Ukrainian conflict, which aims to contain Moscow.
Well, it's pretty clear. I mean, they're taking a very similar strategy and using it against China versus Taiwan as they did between Russia and Ukraine before the war broke out. That this is meant to increase tensions and, I mean, this controlled chaos, which the US hopes to reassert itself as the leading global power, which at the moment is in disarray. What it's doing, it's very similar to what the United States was using between Russia and Ukraine, which it was to constrain and contain Russia. And they're using attempting a very similar strategy with China over Taiwan. However, this, of course, what we've seen, the response from Russia to the Ukrainian situation has actually undermined the US strategy. And they're repeating the same strategy again with China and Taiwan. The US, should we say, intellectually, is not what it used to be. It's fighting a very short term and ultimately engaging in a losing strategy.
Russia's foreign minister has slammed the U.S. and NATO for supplying billions of dollars worth of weapons and military equipment to Ukraine. Sergei Lavrov says the shipments only prolong the agony of the Ukrainian government, extend the conflict, and increase its victims. Lavrov made the remarks in a phone call with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. This was the first contact between the two since the beginning of Russia's war in Ukraine in late February. Lavrov also called for dialogue between the two sides on the issue of a potential prisoner swap. Blinken also described the call as frank and direct. He said the world wouldn't recognize any Russian move to absorb more Ukrainian territory. A survey released by British advocacy group CAGE has revealed shocking feedback regarding British schools pushing Western propaganda on Ukraine while gagging any student activism in support of Palestine. The findings appear to show UK government involvement with both initiatives to peddle Ukraine's sympathy and outlaw Palestine solidarity. Robert Carter reports from London.
A new study has revealed a shocking disparity by British schools, which have gone to great lengths to promote Ukraine solidarity among their students, in stark contrast to how Palestinian solidarity is suppressed in the classroom. Human rights group CAGE carried out the survey, which received 532 responses from parents, students, and teachers. The group said the survey revealed a cavalier attitude to due diligence, including collaboration with organizations with far-right links and the soft penetration of security think tanks and those linked to the UK's so-called Prevent Counter-Extremism program. Some of the survey's findings include 96% of respondents confirming proactive engagement on the Ukraine issue by their school, including holding non-uniform days, activities, or donation appeals. 62% indicated their school had fundraised or hosted donation drives for Ukraine, while 17% also mentioned schools promote the Ukraine flag, such as hoisting the Ukrainian flag on school grounds. And perhaps most shockingly, alleged funding from some schools was intended to provide military gear for the war. In 2021, Israel's bombing of Gaza drew huge international backlash as millions took to the streets worldwide. British students also joined the outpouring of support for Palestine. However, British schools responded negatively, with students being punished for waving a Palestinian flag or branded racist in some cases for expressing solidarity.
For Palestine, supporting Palestine goes against British foreign policy interests. Support for Ukraine is in line with that, and hence that was allowed and encouraged, and the government even produced guidance for schools and for parents into how they could do so. While for Palestine, the government minister for education at the time, Gavin Williamson, he issued a letter, clear letter to schools, indicating to them that discussion on Palestine needs to be clamped down or managed to such a degree where it can only ever amplify the pro-Israeli, pro-apartheid narrative.
In early July, London's High Court dismissed a legal challenge by CAGE against the Department for Education over issuing so-called discriminatory guidance, which was then used by schools to censor and penalize any student who was willing to express solidarity with Palestine, particularly during Israel's bombardment of Gaza last year. This whole saga will have convinced many more that Britain may indeed be biased when looking at conflicts and human rights abuses abroad. Robert Carter, London.
The U.S. political system has been dominated by two main parties, namely the Democrats and the Republicans. Even though there have been other parties, they have been unable to effectively challenge the two major parties so far. But now there appears to be a real push for a third party, a merger of three political groups.
As the political bickering continues to grow in the United States, calls are growing louder for a viable third party there. News has emerged that a group of former Democratic and Republican officials are now trying to form a third party in a bid to challenge the mainstream Republican and Democratic parties. The new party is called Forward. It's a centrist party and appeals to millions of voters who are dissatisfied with the two-party system. According to polls, two-thirds of U.S. citizens believe a third party is needed in the United States.
And the majority of people in this country are not Democrats or Republicans. They are independent. So if there were an opportunity to get on the ballot, I think there would be a lot of support for a third party.
The U.S. political scene has been polarized in recent years. There are now open threats of assassination against rival congressmen and women in the Capitol Hill.
Yeah, there's been a lot of, nasty partisanship. And we've seen that for the past 5-6 years, definitely. People have been at each other's throats. And we do have a situation in which people, I think the majority of people for the first time express they don't want, for example, either Biden or Trump to be president. You know, there's a lot of dissatisfaction with both parties. And there are strong, small factions in each party that are very determined to defeat the other side in a nasty way.
The new party will initially be co-chaired by former Democratic presidential candidate Andrew Yang and Christine Todd Whitman, the former Republican governor of New Jersey. The party plans to hold events across the U.S. this autumn. It will be officially launched in Houston on September 24. Forward will hold its first national convention next summer. The party is a merger of three political groups that have emerged in recent years. They include the New America Movement, the Forward Party, and the Serve America Movement. The party has described itself as a centrist political institution and is based on the platforms of reinvigorating the U.S. economy and giving Americans more choices in the elections. It aims to field candidates for local races, city council, state houses, the U.S. Congress, and all the way up to the presidency.
Well, that's your world news for now. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Limelight.
In his first trip to Washington since he left office, former President Donald J. Trump blamed Democrats for a cesspool of crime in the United States. We now present you an article written by David Smith, The piece is titled Self-Awareness in Short Supply as Trump Calls for Law and Order in D.C. America first, irony last. Donald Trump, the former US president accused of a coup attempt in which police were speared and sprayed, returned to Washington on Tuesday, 26th of July, with a plea for law and order to give police the respect that they deserve. Trump spoke at a luxury hotel less than 2 miles from the US Capitol, where 18 months ago, his supporters furiously attacked law enforcement officers in a bid to overturn the 2020 presidential election result. It was his first visit to the nation's capital since he snubbed Joe Biden's inauguration and took flight to Florida. There were chants of 4 more years as Donald Trump gave a 90-minute address to a summit hosted by the America First Policy Institute, a right-wing think tank conceived by alumni of his White House. Less than a week after the Congressional January 6th committee detailed 187 minutes in which Donald Trump chose not to stop the deadly insurrection, Trump sought to blame Democrats for what he described as rampant crime. He said, "There is no higher priority than cleaning up our streets, controlling our border, stopping the drugs from pouring in, and quickly restoring law and order in America." Donald Trump complained, "There is no longer respect for law, and there certainly is no order. Our country is now a cesspool of crime. We have blood, death, and suffering on a scale once unthinkable because of the Democratic Party's efforts to destroy and dismantle law enforcement throughout America. It has to stop, and it has to stop right now." Donald Trump went on to cite individual murder cases in lurid detail and argued that police have been unfairly maligned. He said, "Every time they do something, they're afraid they're going to be destroyed, their pension is going to be taken away, they'll be fined, they'll be put in jail. Let them do their job, give them back the respect that they deserve." He added, "The radical left's anti-police narrative is a total lie. Let's call it the big lie. Have you ever heard that expression before?" According to official figures, more than 140 Capitol Police and Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police officers were injured while defending the U.S. Capitol. Police officer Caroline Edwards told the January 6th committee, "I was slipping in people's blood. I was catching people as they fell. It was carnage. It was chaos." In the days and weeks after the attack, 5 police officers who had served at the Capitol on January 6, 2021, died. Joe Biden said on Monday, 25th of July, "You can't be pro-insurrection and pro-cop. You can't be pro-insurrection and pro-democracy. You can't be pro-insurrection and pro-America." Donald Trump, a New Yorker born and bred, now resident in Florida, was never entirely at ease in Washington during his 4-year presidency, which some compared to an army of occupation in a Democratic stronghold. Joe Biden beat the Republican by 92% to 5% in the District of Columbia. Donald Trump was rarely seen about town and only ever dined out at the steakhouse in his Pennsylvania Avenue hotel, once the center of the Trump universe, but subsequently sold. The gold lettering that spelled out his name has been unceremoniously expunged, replaced by signage for a new owner, the Waldorf Astoria. But the AFPI's 2-day summit at the Marriott Marquis Washington Hotel created an alternative reality bubble where face masks and mentions of January 6 were vanishingly scarce and where Trump alumni were feted as celebrities, heroes and martyrs. Mark Meadows, a former White House chief of staff whose reputation has been shredded by the January 6th panel, projected insouciance as he chatted, chortled, and posed for photographs with supporters while declining interview requests. As it happened, Donald Trump's estranged Vice President Mike Pence was also in town, but not at this venue, where he might have been heckled. In a case of dueling Washington speeches, Mike Pence addressed the Young America's Foundation's National Conservative Student Conference. A potential rival to Donald Trump in 2024, he said, "I don't know that our movement is that divided. I don't know that the president and I differ on issues, but we may differ on focus." Mike Pence claimed, "I truly do believe that elections are about the future and that it's absolutely essential at a time when so many Americans are hurting, so many families are struggling, that we don't give way to the temptation to look back." Recently, the January 6th committee heard how Mike Pence's Secret Service detail called family members from the U.S. Capitol, fearing that they would never make it home. On Tuesday, 26th of July, Mike Pence announced that his memoir, So Help Me God, will be published on 15th of November this year by Simon & Schuster. Meanwhile, Donald Trump's event bore hallmarks of his campaign rallies, including music from loudspeakers, warm-up acts lavishing praise on him, and a rambling speech of more than an hour that tossed out bigotry and personal insults. Familiar targets included the fake news media, crazy Nancy Pelosi, border security, the Russia investigation, and the January 6 hearings. He advocated quick trials and the death penalty for drug traffickers and argued that presidents should be able to summon the National Guard to restore order without having to wait for the approval of some governor that thinks it's politically incorrect to call them in. Trump returned to his claims of election fraud in 2020, saying, "I ran the first time and I won. Then I ran a second time and I did much better." The crowd cheered and whistled. Moore claimed, "We got millions and millions more votes. We may just have to do it again." Dave Gardner, president of the National Black Pro-Life Union, said, "I'm really hoping for 2024. Promises made, promises kept. Very important to me. I'm strongly pro-life. I want the war finished. And it's not that we hate anybody. We're saying come legally." Dave Gardner, a 67-year-old from Bowie, Maryland, dismissed the insurrection as overblown, claiming, "Most people that went there said it's the people's house. We want to make a statement. People who did anything wrong probably got sidetracked and kind of lost their way." Matthew O'Brien, a 53-year-old director of investigations for the Immigration Reform Law Institute, claimed, "The Trump administration was the first administration since Eisenhower to take immigration seriously. The fact is, without a border, you don't have a country." Matthew O'Brien added, "The January 6th hearings, I'm not sure what their purpose is. It's not clear to me what Congress is looking for in that particular situation. They seem to have been all over the map as far as the questions they're asked and what they're actually doing." Asked if the hearings had shaken his faith in Donald Trump, Christopher Payne, a 70-year-old, an accountant, replied, "No, because I have listened to him many times in the past, including going to his rallies, and for all intents, I know the real president, and yes, okay, like all of us, sometimes you slip up. But the fact is, he's not dwelling on past mistakes, he's looking at what he can do in the future." But Democrats mocked Trump's return to Washington and noted the irony of his law and order message. Cedric Richmond, a senior advisor to the Democratic National Committee, said, "If Donald Trump wants to talk about crime, he should explain why he incited a mob to violently attack police officers defending the Capitol, or why he proposed massive cuts to community policing programs, or why his MAGA Republican allies voted against funding that has bolstered law enforcement."
Food for thought.
Hello, everyone. And on the threshold of the morning month of Muharram, we present you a wise saying from the immortal martyr of Karbala, Imam Hussein, peace be upon him. Whoever uses symbolism in religious matters will always remain in confusion, deviated as he stumbles off the right path, sticking to deviation wherever he goes, straying off the right course, and saying bad and worthless things.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Principles of Friendship. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim, dear listeners. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano, and in today's topic, we are talking about principles of friendship. How to build a successful friendship? What are the main points that we need to consider whenever we want to build a successful friendship in our lives? One of the main points that we need to consider while building a successful friendship is the point of visitation to each other. Whenever you want to make someone a good friendship to you, make sure you create time and visit them. Exchange visit between you and them. Create time in your life. Pay them a visit in their working place, wherever they are. It is possible that a friendship between two people may become sour, but visiting each other will in no doubt return it to its former position, because it is a sign of regret on what happened and a forgetting of it all. And many a times, friends engage themselves in visiting each other. And you know, like eating food together, going out to the restaurants, going out to the cafe. Indeed, this act of eating together is another thing that shows brotherhood. It shows love. It shows respect to each other. And definitely Almighty Allah likes it more. The Almighty Allah, the creator of man, has created a sense of good relationship between the human race. Thus, Islam enjoins Muslims towards good manners. Friendship and the exchanging of visits between brothers and friends, and likewise, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam calls us toward visiting brothers. And surely, Allah the Almighty will reward us for that. It is reported in a prophetic tradition that Whoever visits his brother for the sake of Allah, loving to meet him, an angel will call him on his back, saying, "You have succeeded, and your reward is paradise." Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam says, who is the grandson of the Holy Prophet, says, or rather encourages us towards visiting friends and relationship by saying, "Connect your relationship with others through visiting them while they are around, and write to them, text them, call them, give them a phone call or whatever it is when they are away." All these prophetic sayings, all this prophetic tradition, they're trying to tell us that create time for the person you want to be your friend. Don't just say, "No, this particular friendship is not working." No, try visit each other and see what it can do. Try make a call. You have no time to visit, try make a call. See what it can do to you. And definitely, you will see the results. They are not going to be bad.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano, and we've been talking about how to achieve a good friendship, how to achieve a successful friendship, how to be a successful friend. The main things that we touched on about how to achieve a good friendship is that you should make sure that you build up the culture of visiting each other, exchanging visits between you and the friends that you have. The sayings of the Prophet, the Imams, are showing us that definitely there is a good reward for us whenever we visit our friends, whenever we create time and pay visit to our friends. Now, Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam reported Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib saying, "Meeting friends is a great blessing, even if it is not much. Whenever you create time and you meet your friend, 2 minutes, 1 minute, even if it's 2 seconds, even if it's not much, it has a great blessings and it has a great reward." So no doubt we have seen the importance of visiting friends through the different hadiths of the Holy Prophet and Imams alayhi salam, of which we have seen here. We will close this chapter with what was reported from Imam al-Sadiq when he was reported to be saying, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi salam said, "Visiting increases love between people," that visiting your friend increases love between you and the person you are friend with. And in order to not lose the effect of visiting others, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wasallam shows that the distance between one visit and another should not be too much, so as to create weariness and not to be too short. So visiting others is one of the main traits, one of the main things, the important things that will build our relationship, that will make us have a good and a successful friendship. Thank you so much for listening. God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Just like humans and animals, plants get sick too. But what do you do with an ill plant? An Indian man has found an answer to that. He has opened an emergency room only for plants in Amritsar, a city in India's Punjab state. A tax officer and his wife have set up the Pushpa Tree and Plant Hospital. In Pushpa, they have expert biologists and tree lovers on hand to provide the so-called sick patients with their essential nutrients. The clinic aims to treat any and every disease and even has an emergency vehicle on call for unhealthy trees around the city. The officer's wife says, just as we humans bleed, breathe and need cures, plants also bleed, breathe and need cures.
We provide approximately 32 various services for plants and trees, like if there's a nail in the tree, how to take out that nail. The poisoning of the trees. Yes, you heard it right. There are people who poison the trees. Again, if the tree is not bearing fruits, there's an attack of mealybugs or another insects. That's also cured here. If the trees or plants are dying and you're unable to take care of them, even that problem is sorted out.
Only a month into the hospital's operation, Rohit Mehra and his team of 20 volunteers have already received more than 300 queries. The hospital is also completely free of charge.
Some gardens are decorated with genomes and other cute ornaments, but this garden uses tank debris to stand out amongst others. The intention of the gardener isn't to have the most army-themed pitch. Valerie actually tried to remove the tank, but ultimately because of its size and weight, it was impossible. So he just let it stay. The owner says he is used to having the tank there, even though it reminds him of hard times. Next to the wreckage, this family has planted cabbage and potatoes, which they harvest and use each year. The tank was left over from the war between Russia and Ukraine that began earlier this year. British paleontologists have made an exciting fossil discovery which has been identified as the earliest known animal predator.
It's quite a large fossil. The preserved part is at least 20 centimetres tall and it would have lived attached to the seafloor bottom. But it's a broken specimen, so we actually don't know how large the entire colony is. This is only a fragment of it.
Wilby says the animal had a stalk and a cup on top with little tentacles, which most likely used to catch food out of the water. The ancient animal is related to sea anemones, jellyfish and corals, and pushes the known existence of these species back to 20 million years. Wilby explains the fossil displays a key point in the evolution of animal. The fossil is said to be around 560 million years old and was discovered in Charnwood Forest, northern England, amongst over 1,000 other fossils.
Summer heat is here and zoos are working to not only keep visitors cool, but animals safe during the hot weather. A Belgian zoo takes extra precautions to help animals survive a fierce heat wave that has left Western Europe sweltering. Pyridaza Zoo, located in Wallonia in the province of Hainaut, provides animals with frozen food, fruit suspended in water and extra showers. It has also created extra shaded areas with good ventilation along with water points to ensure animals have access to them. Zookeepers say managing animals in high temperatures requires good forward planning. Zoos across the world have a variety of responses to keep animals cool. So we humans are not the only creatures who feel significant stress during the hot months. Animals, too, are impacted by it.
Iran's city of Rafsanjan has hosted an international talent contest dubbed Stage Stars. The event is aimed at providing a chance for stage talents from across the world to come in the spotlight. Yusuf Jalali reports from Rafsanjan. Let's check it out.
This is a global stage for talents. The fifth International Stage Stars Festival wrapped up with the announcement of winners, who have been competing in four categories of singing, voice acting, show hosting, and sound impression. The top performances from each category won the golden mic and a cash prize.
The festival was a place for more serious competition between those who have a say in a stage performance. I'm so happy to be chosen by the jury as the best show host of the contest.
It was an amazing event for talents. I'm so glad to be part of this. Talents from all across Iran and many parts of the world competed in the festival, so winners should be proud of themselves.
Held in Iran's city of Rafsanjan, the two-day event brought together participants from 14 countries, including Iran, Afghanistan, Kyrgyzstan, Nigeria, and Turkey, to flaunt their neck for stage performance.
The scale of this contest is global. Many of us participants did not have any idea we could be stand-up comedians or show hosts. But when we got on stage here, we ourselves discovered our own talents.
I really love that, seeing that people around the world are coming here and presenting themselves. It's a very great feeling. Of course, they will be progressed and they will develop yourself when they will got the result.
The jury is comprised of top Iranian actors, TV presenters, and voice artists. They say the competition has been tough, and those who stood out are real stage stars.
We tried our best to pick talents who really acted like professionals on stage. Not only should they care about the standards and principles of a stage performance, but they must innovate, improvise, and stand out.
This festival acted like a university for stage talents. It taught a lot of lessons about the stage to participants, especially for those who failed to win the contest.
Organizers say this contest is not just about scouting for stage talents. They say the event helps shine a spotlight on talents and lead them to their community.
The fifth Stage Stars Festival is aimed at bringing stage talents to light. Many of the participants already have a few years of experience, so this stage is not supposed to discover them, but to springboard them to a higher level in their careers.
All of the contestants, even those who come from foreign countries, must perform in Persian. However, organizers plan to include other languages in the upcoming editions of the festival.
To those who won the golden mic here, this is a dream come true. But they say, aside from the prize, Stage Stars has marked a milestone in their pursuit of success, since they have now come under the spotlight. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Rafsanjan.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Age is just a number when it comes to pursuing your goals. That's what 98-year-old Italian man Giuseppe Paterno has proven. Paterno has become the oldest university graduate in his country for the second time. In July 2020, he was graduated in history and philosophy from the University of Palermo. 2 years on, he's now got a master's degree in the same subject. Paterno grew in a poor family in Sicily and always had a desire for learning, but he was unable to go to university at a young age. He finished high school aged 31, 6 years after he got married. Paterno's love to study or for study never stopped, making him enter the university in his 90s.
The biggest and brightest supermoon of 2022 has risen with a crimson hue above horizons across the globe. It's also known as a buck moon because it falls in July. The name does not come from its appearance. You won't see the shape of a deer on the moon's surface or anything. It refers to something that happens in nature at this time. It's called a buck moon because the antlers of male deer or bucks are in full growth in July. Supermoons occur when a full moon comes closest to Earth in its orbit. This is not the last supermoon of 2022. There will be another in August, marking the final supermoon in this year's set of four. During a routine X-ray examination of one of Van Gogh's paintings, art conservators at the National Galleries of Scotland have discovered a secret self-portrait.
When we saw the X-ray for the first time, of course, we were hugely excited, absolutely thrilled to bits. Such a major discovery of an alternative composition happens once, twice in a conservator's lifetime.
The self-portrait was found during an examination of an 1885 painting by Van Gogh as the museum was prepping for an upcoming exhibition on Impressionism. Hidden from view for over a century, the self-portrait is on the reverse side of the Dutch artist's painting called The Head of a Peasant Woman. It was found beneath cardboard and layers of glue. Van Gogh is known to have often reused his canvases, working on their reverse side as well.
When he took the painting to Paris, he didn't have very much money. He was scrabbling around and decided clearly to use the back of these series of paintings that he'd brought with him from the Netherlands to Paris to explore self-portraiture for the first time.
Experts at the museum believe the materials covering the self-portrait were applied in the early 20th century before the art went on display. Art historians say when Vincent van Gogh was low on money, he took to painting on both sides of his canvases, but over the years, some of his reverse side paintings were covered up and lost. The X-ray image will feature at the Royal Scottish Academy in Edinburgh starting in July.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In Britain, shop prices for the month of July soared by the greatest amount since at least 2005, as the cost of fresh food was driven up by rising charges for fertiliser, animal feed and transport. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Guardian journalist Sarah Butler. The piece is titled "Rising production costs lead to 4.4% rise in UK shop prices." In Britain, shop prices for the month of July soared by the greatest amount since at least 2005. As the cost of fresh food was driven up by rising charges for fertilisers, animal feed and transport. Prices rose by 4.4% compared to July of last year, a step up from a year-on-year rise of 3.1% in June, according to the British Retail Consortium's latest shop price index, collated with market research firm Nielsen IQ. Fresh food inflation soared to 8% according to the index from 6.2% a month before, the highest rate since March of 2009. That contributed to overall food inflation of 7%. Helen Dickinson, the chief executive of the British Retail Consortium, a trade body which represents most major retailers in Britain, said some of the biggest price rises were seen in dairy products, including lard, cooking fats and butter. Helen Dickinson added, households and businesses must prepare for a difficult period as inflationary pressures hit home. Rising production costs, from the price of animal feed and fertilizer to availability of produce exacerbated by the war in Ukraine, coupled with exorbitant land transport costs, led food prices to rocket. The high rate of inflation on basic food essentials is likely to hit low-income households in Britain much harder, ramping up pressure on those already affected by the cut in universal credit benefits and rising energy and petrol costs. A fifth of British households now have an average shortfall of £60 a week between what they earn and what they need to cover essentials such as energy bills, rent, transport and food. As the rising cost of living leaves people with the lowest amount of spare cash in almost 5 years, according to data from the Asda Income Tracker, collated by the Centre for Business and Economic Research, CBER, out this week. Shoppers are switching to discount stores, dropping brands in favour of supermarkets' own label goods, and trimming back spending on luxuries such as subscription services, as they try to make their budget stretch. Food is not the only contributor to shop price inflation. Non-food prices were pushed up by 3% on July of last year, according to the BRC figures, as a result of higher shipping and production costs, partly caused by continuing disruption in China from COVID-related restrictions. Helen Dickinson said, as inflation reaches new heights, retailers are doing all they can to absorb as much of these rising costs as possible and to look for efficiencies in their businesses and supply chain. With households enduring a cost of living crunch, retailers are expanding their value ranges to offer the widest variety of goods to those most in need, providing discounts to vulnerable groups and raising staff pay. Also in Britain, in the Conservative Party leadership race, Rishi Sunak has promised to scrap VAT on household fuel bills for a year to tackle the cost-of-living crisis in a dramatic U-turn as he battles to remain in the race to become the next Prime Minister. With his rival Liz Truss promising £30 billion in immediate tax cuts, Rishi Sunak has reportedly stressed the risk of unfunded promises and insisted he has already taken action to cushion the blow of the sharp increase in domestic energy bills expected in October. But as he continues to trail the Foreign Secretary Liz Truss in polls of Tory members, and with ballot papers landing within days, he announced a new handout worth £160 for every household, despite having previously condemned the policy. As Chancellor, I knocked £400 off everyone's energy bill and provided support of £1,200 for the most vulnerable households. This additional VAT cut will help deal with the current emergency, Rishi Sunak said, claiming it was a benefit of Brexit that he was able to take the measure. He added, this temporary and targeted tax cut will get people the support they need, while also, critically, bearing down on price pressures.